Hi, welcome everybody to the Stream Leader Report. I'm Ross Brand, joined by my co-hosts Rebecca Gunter, Rob Greenlee, and Claudia Santiago. Obviously, it's been a tough last 17, 18 hours. Perhaps like me, you stayed up late watching the news. There was a terrible mass shooting in Maine, 18 people dead, 12 people hurt, I think is the latest numbers that I've seen. And so rather than do our normal show, we're going to start and talk about this issue, not to cover it like the news, but from our perspective, because we've talked a lot about issues like mental health and the stresses of everyday life and so forth. And I don't know to what degree those have played in here, but it's possible. The latest is the shooting suspect's name is Robert Card. He's still wanted on murder charges, so they haven't caught him yet. 18 dead is better than they thought the numbers were going to be, as horrific as it is. And so I guess my first thought is mental health. There's a lot of different ways to go on it, but that's seems like there were warnings out there. He had talked about doing some horrible things, shootings and mass killings and things like that, and he was released back into the public. Was he ever treated? And I guess those would be some of the concerns.
Yeah, it's really tragic. That's all I can say, right?
Yeah. Very sobering.
Yeah. I don't know, Ross. I mean, I don't know what we can really talk about on this. You know, this is an ongoing struggle that we've had in this country. And I don't know what the solution is anymore. I mean, it just continues to happen. I don't know that there is anything specifically we can do to prevent these things from happening. I do think that the core issue is mental health and the division that's happening in this country around all sorts of issues and topics that are, I think people are having a hard time coping with the realities of life now, and people are challenged economically and socially, and sometimes people break. You know, it's really tragic, and it's like what happened to, you know, the war in the Middle East that's going on right now. It's all, this is so tragic, loss of life and loss of people feeling love and care for each other. You know, I think that's the real loss here, is the loss of community and the loss of society, and increasing numbers of people getting engulfed in stress and fear. And those are not healthy emotions for humans to experience on a regular basis.
It lost a sense of safety too. In our everyday lives.
Yep.
Younger people already go through school shooter drills and things they should not have to go through. I remember maybe when I was in kindergarten, I was at the tail end of it. We did some sort of air raid drill, and everybody had to duck under their desk, as though that would save you from a nuclear weapon or whatever dropping on on your school. I think at that young, I wasn't maybe able to understand the impact of it all and everything, but I imagine with the news and videos and everything, it's much more real to kids now what they're going through. But you know, a bowling alley, a restaurant, these places we think of as safe places to send yourself, to send your kids, things like that. And
a clearly, church, a synagogue.
Exactly.
Concert. Yeah. Crazy.
Concert. You know,
even the festival in Israel, how that all went down. Mm-hmm. Who would have thought? I think more and more, I'm not in the States, and this, first of all, just my condolences to all that are suffering there. and the trauma it triggers, it does. And I think the more also that we pay attention to our community, those around us, and even as these, like you mentioned, Rob, these stressors, while maybe once upon a time in a period of our lives, we could handle that more. And now in a different season of life, maybe not so much, right? So getting checked out, getting the proper therapy or perhaps even medication, even for a season that's needed. I know, Rebecca, we've talked before about, you know, ADHD and autism and these things that there's certain triggers too for everybody. So I think that's so important. And I mean, I know there's not one solution, but this is very, mental health is a very real thing. And I'm very saddened to hear all that's gone down.
I wish this kind of stuff wasn't so good for the news cycle. I wish the feeding right. frenzy wasn't right. so good for the news cycle, because I think that when we talk about mental health, is that a thing? Absolutely. But I think that we're so hyper-individualistic in America that, you know, everything becomes someone's personal problem and not kind of some larger systemic stuff that are at play. So the whole thing to me just feels kind of gross in the oversimplification and the projection on just an individual. And then also, again, like, it's like, you know, a feeding frenzy at the media table, the more of this stuff goes on. And we're, as collectively as a community, the ones who are suffering under the weight of it, as well as the very real people who were just trying to live their lives.
Yeah. I want to bring in this comment from Beauty Bubble. Says, to give some context to the number of people highly impacted, a news YouTube channel had 620,000 views last night, versus his under 70,000 on global conflicts. So it does bring eyeballs. It does really impact people when these type of events occur close to home. And she also says, I do believe we're searching for answers more than ever as we sit together. I mean, I guess, and I don't mean to make some sort of flip generalization, but it seems like the more technology has brought the world closer and made us all more interconnected, the less we're in touch with maybe what's going on with our neighbors, our community, even within our own families and such. I don't know what the answer to that is. The other thing I'll throw out there, and I think because we talk about issues related to creators and how creators can handle things, my first thought when this news broke and I was following it last night was, maybe we shouldn't do a show today. And there's that competing thought with, maybe we don't do a show versus the show must go on. Is it inappropriate to come on and talk about the robots or some new invention in tech or something like that? Or by coming on and doing the show, are we providing a distraction, comfort, normalcy? Rob, I guess I'm going to go to you on this first, just although Claudia and Rebecca, you have a lot of experience with these type of decisions, I'm sure. But Rob, what have you noticed through your years of doing live shows? Is there an appropriate way? Is there any sort of consensus on how to react or what to do with your content in situations where there's a major news event, tragedy kind of thing?
Yeah, I think there's a couple ways that we can react to it. And I think generally, though, I like to be positive about how I react to it and sensitive to the impacted individuals like we have on this program already today. But I also am concerned about the aspect of this that, because of that exploitive nature that media has on events like this to drive views, just like what Beauty Bubble gave an example of. I don't know what that content was that they were presenting, but we have to ask ourselves, is all the attention to these things, these events, these happenings that are reoccurring, one of the drivers of the reasons that they happen? So, you know, it's the chicken or the egg kind of thing. What is the, you know, if we don't pay attention to these things, will they tend to not happen, or somehow, because we all pay attention to them and we all give comfort and love and care to the impacted individuals, that is more important than ignoring them and not driving attention to the perpetrators of this, and giving them some sort of reward of attention for their evil deeds. So that's the aspect of that I struggle with. You know, I think as media creators, we want to cover what the news is. And I think the mainstream media folks want to do that as well. Because, you know, they've had this mantra, if it bleeds, it leads. And that is because humans are attracted to tragedies and disasters and things like that. And it drives a lot of attention. But really what is needed right now is care and love and support for the impacted individuals from this, and that person being punished for his actions. And that's what we should really focus on, I think.
Claudia, what would you do if you had a show in another city in Maine last night and this news came out? Does the show go on? Do you perform the songs that you had planned? Do you cancel it? Have you ever dealt with a situation where there was a major tragedy or something? Yes. And you had a show to do in person?
Definitely. So first of all, the authorities of that area, they will shut down a show if there's any danger to the public. So then we just do what they ask. Number two, yes, I've been involved in situations where it's something like this, or let me just back up a little bit. Before I go to another territory, another city, another country, I always do my research. What's going on in that city? What has happened, whether it's political, whether it's demographic, they may have just suffered an earthquake, you know what I'm saying? Because for me as an entertainer, I'm not just there to perform a show. I'm there to communicate with the hearts of people. I'm right. there to bring them a life transformation. I'm there, you know, when you look at yourself as someone like that, then it's got to matter what people are going through. So I usually do my research. So if I was going to be doing a concert in Maine and it was safe, the authorities say, hey, the concert is going on, I would address it. I wouldn't ignore it. I would address it. I would really from the heart. And I might even change my set list to include a song or two that might be very pertinent to this situation. And sometimes I might even say, hey, can we turn the house lights up so everybody can see each other? We can sing together. Sometimes I've done that. Sometimes I've said to the musicians, hey, no music, let's do this a cappella. So it brings a measure of healing and interaction and a grieving together. So yeah, definitely. With my broadcast shows, I've had situations, you know, I do a nighttime serenade in different seasons. And when I do that and something big has gone down, it's really hard to get in front of a camera, because when you do a live, you can actually see people's faces and you can kind of, but when you're doing a broadcast, you can't. But what I do is I take time out right at the very front. Hey. You know, I address it. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, same thing there too. I might even change my set list to really connect with my audience.
Russ, I'll share that I had a show today and kind of faced the same decision-making. I really woke up to our group thread about whether we should do a show or not do a show. And I considered, like, should I email my guest or connect with my guest and ask them their opinion on it. And sadly, I have so much crisis fatigue that I was like, well, tomorrow it's a different school. Tomorrow it's a school. The day after that, it's a grocery store. The day after that, if I stopped, you know, business as usual because of, you know, classic America, at what point do you have to make those decisions? So at the end of the day, or well, at the beginning of the day, because I just did that, just wrapped that show just half an hour ago, I didn't, you know, I kind of came into the green room. My guest and I didn't even acknowledge it. We just kind of went straight into the show. And maybe I should have said something at the top of it. But again, I have so much crisis fatigue that it feels like a different day, a different, you know, set of heartbreaking deaths at the hands of a domestic terrorist. So I don't know if I made the right decision or not, to be completely transparent, to just kind of go on with it. And I think time might tell. I'm definitely looking to the thought leadership for the folks that are in this room and also in the comments, you know, Beauty Bubble and Podcast Engineering School, etc., whether or not I did the right thing. But
yeah, I mean, I think it also maybe matters what your topic is, because we're a panel show that tends to focus on the news, but from the aspect of creators and such. To just completely ignore this would seem sort of, and we're live, right? We're not doing a show that's pre-recorded and we drop it at a certain time. It might come across as a little callous. If you're doing a show on business coaching and you never bring current events in, unless your client would be doing a project that had some touch on that, I think it's a different situation. I think it does depend on what your content is and where you're performing and a lot of different factors.
I think your audience, also your target audience, once again, even if you're broadcasting, to be sensitive to who they are. I mean, if most of them are in Maine, you might want to consider addressing.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I think geographically would have made a difference.
Exactly. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Exactly.
If this were like Maine public access, I would have been like,
you know, and I
didn't shut it down.
I didn't even know about this. It's going to sound really weird. You know, I was hanging out on Facebook quite a bit yesterday. And of course, us Canadians don't even get the news there. So I found out through Ross late last night, and I was just numb. And again, with the fatigue you're talking about here, Rebecca, I mean, my friends in Acapulco just got slammed with a Category 5 hurricane. Venue owners, friends that are there that are like family musicians. So, I mean, I was just, my head was spinning last night. And, you know, there's just these catastrophes and these things that happen. And so when Ross asked me, you know, what do you think? I said, you know what? I think it would be healing actually for all of us to get together and throw out some things. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad I asked your advice, because I think it was the right thing to do. I want to say a quick hello to the Podcast Engineering School, which is Chris Curran, one of the all-time great podcast engineers, audio engineers in the podcast space. He's got a wonderful podcast show, Podcast Engineering Show, and he's got the Podcast Engineering School, where you can learn how to engineer podcasts at the highest level. Of course, the great Beauty Bubble is with us. Always great to have her in the chat and her insights. She's on top of the news and always bring some interesting elements in from what's going on in the world in real-time research. Before we get to our usual topics, or some of the topics we had thought about doing, why don't we transition by going to another news topic that's related to social media, and this might be up Rebecca's alley for sure, and that is, what is the impact of TikTok on where people's sympathies lie with the war between Israel and Hamas, Israel and Gaza? And there's been some discussion on X or Twitter that perhaps ByteDance, the parent company for TikTok, which is based out of China and is less sympathetic to U.S. interests, which tend to support Israel in these things, is pushing a content from a anti-Israel perspective to a higher, more prominence, and there's a lot of bots and things that are supporting that. And does that have an impact on how different generations view the conflict? So you have probably the least social media active generation, which is over 65 years old, which is 81% supportive of Israel's response, saying it's fully justified, while the 18 to 34 year olds, who are most likely to treat TikTok as a search engine and a place to get news, only 27% feel that Israel's response to Hamas attacks is fully justified. The middle generations come out more balanced on that, but there's a huge disparity on how the older generations and the younger generations see this issue.
I think it also depends on what side of TikTok you're on, where the algorithm is leaving you. But I can certainly say that from what my algorithm says, definitely falls along with this. It is very, I would not say supportive of, if you had to pick a side, but I would not call TikTok creators supportive of the Israel side. I'm using air quotes, but
right.
Very, very much tracks with this 18 to 34 year old statistic here. But again, I'm on a very kind of like, you know, up with the proletariat. just a very like Marxian approach to politics and worldview. So I think if you were on maybe a different side of TikTok, as they say, you might see the statistics flip a little bit.
I think it just gets back to perspective on the situation and what aspect of this that you value and where your values align with this question, because it is a convoluted, to some degree, question depending on your perspective, right? It's not... it can be clear cut from the standpoint that, you know, Israel is justified in a response here, but a response tends to be violence as well. So I think
it's the kind of response that's getting pushed back.
Right. Well, sure. I mean, but any military response is I think what they're concerned about. What my concern is that this conversation tends to leave out the tragedy that happened to Israel. And so that is a part of this that is hard for me to kind of grapple with as I think about it, is that I think we've shifted this conversation over to what's happening to the people in Gaza, which I think is a valid concern. I don't want to see people get killed over in Gaza too, but what is Israel supposed to do after they've been attacked first? It's you can bring it back to like a street fight, right? People, you know, who attacked who first, right? Is the argument here. And are you justified in hitting someone that hit you first? Or do you need to show compassion to the person that hit you first, right? That is really the argument here that I think younger people are making. And I think it's definitely a valid argument. You know, that's at the core of the struggle in the Middle East too, is these multi-generational conflicts that each side does damage to the other side. And that creates animosity and hatred that foments in further violence. And I think that's the bigger question. I do think that Israel is justified because they got attacked first. But then on the other hand, does that mean that, you know, all these citizens in Gaza deserve to be killed too? And that's not an equivalency that makes sense to me either. So that's what makes this issue so difficult.
or having water cut off or power. I mean, to me, that's straight up torture.
Yeah.
It's very hard to hear.
But sure. Also, it gets more complicated too, because the
got power for the rockets, and they got they got power to operate those tunnels. If the power really was cut off, they wouldn't be able to keep their hostages and their weapons in those tunnels.
Right, and the terrorist group is embedding filming themselves
people
in
running
with,
in and out of hospitals as they do constantly needs power in those hospitals. So the idea that they're we were told that people are going to starve in 2 days, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Well, and also the Hamas group is embedding their military operations in with the civilians and using them as a shield. And, you know, that's part of the issue here, too.
I mean, I think part of the social media story, too, is that different cultures approach what they show graphically differently. Mm-hmm. And so Israel's been kind of very reserved about showing the horrors that its citizens go through and playing up that side of things. In other words, not showing dead bodies and not showing, except maybe to a small group of journalists so that someone
could
tell the story. Yeah. Whereas it's very hard to know what's real and what's not when you see a blown up building and then you see a completely clean child with a teddy bear sitting on a pile of rocks or whatever. And you go, well, was that child really pulled from the rubble or was that child placed there? Because nobody really would place a child if they thought something was going to blow up. 2 seconds, like, because you know when building blows up, it's not you don't know if that's the end of the ordnance explode. So there's a lot of stuff going on that's sort of, in the social media wars, isn't proportionate, given that that's a word that's used a lot. And you would think that the Israeli side would have an advantage being that they're more sort of pro-Western side, right? They would have more advanced media and so forth. But I don't think they do. I think they're completely outclassed in terms, and I think it's partly cultural, just a willingness to do horror scenes and things like that. They don't see their population as being there to exploit.
Yeah. Well, then they don't embed their military operations in with civilians is the other difference between each side. And so targets that are military targets are military targets. They're not military targets surrounded by civilians that are being used as shields. And that's the other aspect of this that is actually, at least what I'm understanding, is going on. And it's kind of like that urban warfare tactic that that various groups have employed, right?
Yeah.
So it's not a good time over there, that's for sure.
And it's really hard to know what's really going on. I mean, with the war I went through, the propaganda was like rampant, and it was years and years and years after that you really found out what was going on.
Right.
And a part of that was the people that were imprisoned were so traumatized they were scared to even talk about it. So I think it'll be really interesting what comes out after the fact. And now, too, we have the technology thing. Anybody could Photoshop a baby sitting anywhere and make it look like whatever, right? So it's really hard to know. And the censorship, too, that's going on. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing a bit with TikTok here is I think we're going to be seeing more and more of that, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't say TikTok's entirely the reason for swaying opinions or the social media side. I mean, there's, you know, I think it's the generation that you grew up in, what you were, you know, what your family position on these type of issues is. Also, if you're in a university campus, who you're exposed to, where the activists are, where, you know, who your friends are, who you talk to. I think there's a lot of complicated reasons why different generations might have different views on this. But I thought it was worth bringing up because it's a big discussion, and it's interesting to see on X or Twitter how there's a really wide variety of views, and it's very interesting. You get views that you wouldn't expect, and just long threads, and you get some that are just full of, you know, argument that's for the argument's sake, and others where people will write long histories and different things. And it's been it's exhausting but also interesting following it. So we've got a lot of major news. I want to bring in Beauty Bubble has a story. She had a presentation before a school board the day of Columbine, and at the lectern she took a deep breath and said, "It was no day for me to sell soap, but everybody should love on their children." Well, it's, you know, a nice way to approach it. She also say military responses require preparedness to introduce military forces. So both parties are demonstrating their abilities, which may be unsupported by the younger demographic. An idea for a poll. And Chris Curran says, unpopular opinion, more people need to transcend the widespread proclivity to choose a side and blindly root for their team.
Back to critical thinking, am I right?
Exactly. And of course, as citizens of the United States, Canada, we also have our perspectives and what's in our country's interests. How much resources or not resources do we pour into conflicts overseas? There's a lot of areas of discussion that are kind of beyond the scope of this show. Claudia brought up an awesome topic. Let's move into something more along the lines of technology in the future and creators. Claudia, what is going on with the idea that we might be able to add new senses?
Well, I'm not sure if you've got that last one that I just sent over to you, or the one prior, David Eagleman, and he actually ran across him through Mitch Jackson was talking about AI and courtroom and all this, and then he had this link to this guy called David Eagleman. And if you guys don't know who Mitch Jackson is, he's a lawyer out of California, great guy. So anyway, so I checked it out, and I was astounded. I mean, we're talking, you know, ChatGPT and AI, but these folks are delving into a whole other area. I'm really big on like the human condition and just, you know, how us as humans can create and evolve and do entrepreneurial feats. Well, David Eagleman has been helping the blind and the deaf. And okay, you've got that one. So let me just finish up with David Eagleman first. He created this vest that can sense vibrations and that, and it helps those that are blind. It helps them. And how I understand this, and you know, you guys pipe in anytime you want, but the brain is just amazing. The brain, the way it configures everything, it has these receptors and it just is amazing. But what happens when somebody's blind? What happens when somebody is in an accident and no longer has sight? What happens when somebody's deaf? Well, you can't recreate those eyes, but what these folks are doing is they've created this watch that literally sends signals to the brain and does things where you can see again or hear again. Same with these vests. And so what they do is they connect, I don't know the ins and outs completely, but they connect this to certain receptors in the brain that normally say the eye would connect to. Because the brain doesn't care where they get their information from. So this is really amazing technology they're moving into. So it really helps medicine. But this whole thing too with body hacking, so it's as creators, this is going to be really intriguing for you all, because the future, what holds, like AI came rather quickly, or so we seem. Well, this has been in development. Like this one guy, his name was let me see if I can find here. Paul Bach and Rita, sensory substitution. So if you scroll down a bit, what he did in 1969, he experimented in a dentist chair and he put a pad behind that would give the lower back senses, and it helped the blind to be able to see objects. It's the weirdest thing, but the brain somehow reconfigures things. And so this was in 1969, and his wife just got approval from the FDA in 2015 to approve this thing. The vest is neosensory, and that one is the one that this fellow that I first talked about. There's a filmmaker called Rob Spence. He's got this eyeborg thing. He's a red pupil in one of his eyes, and dude gets like Terminator vision. He can zoom in, he can record video. It's super expensive, but like with the medical advancement, this guy that created the vest, normally somebody that's deaf would need like a cochlear ear implant, and that's like super expensive. Mm-hmm. Well, these vests are made so cheaply that people in third world countries, they can help them hear again. They can help the deaf. So it's really quite something. Like I was just, there's this other thing called the BrainPort camera. I thought of you, Rob. They put it at the tip of the tongue, and it's a little camera that's implanted, and it can help people see.
So it's your tongue out at people when you're doing your video? Is that kind of what happened?
Like, unbelievable, right? And I don't know if you guys have been at the airport, but some of the stores now, you have to wave your hand in front to enter the store. And what does that do is it scans your veins, and it's just the weirdest thing. They collect
a little too much information. Right. But right. I think, let me see if I understand how this would work. Your bypass, we think that vision comes from the eyes and sound comes from the ears. And in fact, those are the tools that we have. But this would bypass that and go to the area of the brain that receives the information. And if you are able to provide that information to that area of the brain, now you're able to see or hear because you're getting the same information that the eyes or the ears would give you. Is that an accurate way to sort of sum it up?
Pretty well, yeah.
That's amazing.
It is amazing. And this, like, I'm just going to use the vest thing for an example. They put that on someone, they did some tests, and they had him on an iPad scrolling through, and it gave him all this information about the stock market. He could sense it through other sensory parts of his brain. So we may not even need ChatGPT or AI in the future. If we have these vests or implants or whatever, it's really quite something. I just want to give you an example too. Like reptiles, they have a certain type of a sense. Birds have a different magnetic sense. Fish have that's what they call the Umwelt. For them, that's their reality. That's what they live in. They don't have our senses. Just as like I don't have the magnetic senses a bird would to know which way to navigate. Okay. So that's what they call it, Umwelt. So what is normal for me is what I can touch and see. Well, what they're working at is having these, whether you wear something or you get it implanted, where all of a sudden you might have the Umwelt of a bird or a, do you see what I'm saying? So it's really pretty wild, and it's not that far off. Like I said, you know, AI kind of showed up, but this kind of thing. There's this other thing called the RFID chips. Now, I need to look into that more. But these things go under skin and all that kind of thing. Now, this is interesting, okay, for all the creators out there, entrepreneurs. Some of these companies are looking to put programs in place where if you have that, you collect certain amount of data and it gets submitted to them. If you sign up for something, you actually work for them, you get paid for data collection. So that's now, a whole other business.
Now you read a lot. I mean, things that I read, you know, look out for this person's a transhumanist, or look out for these transhuman inventions that are coming. Is this what they mean, or what do they mean when they talk about transhuman?
Yeah, it's the integration between technology and biotechnology. Is really, if you want to take it to a high level, it's the integration of the two, right? We're already hybrid trans technology human beings right now because of our mobile phones and our Aura rings and our Apple watches, and that are making those digital connections with our biology, right? And then you just take it to kind of the next level, and that would be like a Neuralink kind of connection, where a device that communicates with the internet connects directly to your brain and gives you the ability to, which will happen probably in robots too, where you'll be able to buy skill packages and download it to your consciousness, to your brain or whatever, as like an app, you know? So you could by acquiring this kind of almost like an app, it's an analogy to an app, which is really skills that could be applied to your brain that maybe teach you how to fly an airplane or something like that, or how you do something, and you pay a couple of dollars a month for access to that. And actually I pulled up an article, and this is a story that that I broke on my longtime radio show that I did about the internet and the web. But researchers want to send smells over the internet. So if you think about that kind of capability as well, you're starting to create this connection between technology as a pass-through for kind of real-world experiences, right? So, you know, we're going deeper and deeper, you know, one of those things, and it's a little bit weird to think about that you could send an odor or a scent to something, to someone over the internet. But if that's connected to your brain, maybe there's some sort of a sense that generates, mm-hmm. That's similar to what your nose senses when they smell something, right? So it could create this electronic stimulation that simulates a particular smell. So, you know, we're starting to get into this brain internet interface, and it's, mm-hmm. and it's definitely, going to change the way we look at the world, and this, what you're talking about, you know, Claudio, with the expansion of human senses, I think is a whole nother spectrum too. I think that there's lots of discussion right now around, how limited human perception really is to the scope of energy that's in our environment, right? From the aspect of spectrum of light, we only see a very narrow spectrum of light. And is there a way that we can unlock that other spectrum to see things that, you know, like heat, off in a distance or something like that? We can actually, it's possible through technology now to sense the location of humans through walls and through barriers, right? Based on their heat, kind of capability, right? And because that issues a certain kind of frequency into the world that then can be picked up by an appropriate sensor. So, you know, a lot of these things are going to get pushed on, and we're going to have the ability to, hopefully it's a positive thing and it isn't used for negative things, but that's always the trade-off, right? Is that these things have been used in military applications for years, you know, those night sensing goggles, right? Yeah. To find people that maybe you can, you know, target, right? So, but that could be used for positive things too. So, you know, our world is going to look very weird in the next 10 years. I mean, the things that are being,
you know, I was astounded too in reading and having him speak, because he said he was wearing that vest. Was it the vest or the watch? I can't remember now. But while he's giving his TED talk, if he checked into the hashtag for that certain TED Talk from stage, he could sense what all the responses are on X. So it is just the weirdest technology, because it's not just like, oh, you know, this will help sight or ear. It's like this intelligence that he would come up with.
Yeah, it's possible through AI to analyze the comments on a thread and summarize it and deliver it to your brain. So you can, it's like this incoming message saying, well, the sentiment in the comment threads on this live show are this. Yeah. And so let's talk about this topic, right? It could be delivered directly to the brain, right?
Now, too, for the creatives out there, the fashion industry, also this, I found this interesting. And, you know, I've actually been to a fashion show because I've got a friend of mine who's in music, but she's also a designer. And they've got clothing that is tech clothing. But I don't know if you guys have heard of somebody named Orlan. She's an artist who like redoes her, like surgically gets redone. Okay. Now, Lady Gaga showed up one time with facial prosthetics, but there's these nails even called the NFC nails. And they, if you wear these nails, you come close to your phone and you can read things. So that's tech couture. And it's out on the catwalk already.
Well, you said NFC nails. I thought you get National Football Conference games.
You're on the sports.
I got there. Right. The NFC package right there. Right. Let's check the chat real quick before we do our final topic. Bruce says, Bruce McKay, great to see you, says the brain is amazing. It's able to sort out and direct different kinds of information that is being fed, visual, sonic, etc. Beauty Bubble says, words, visual information from the retina is relayed through the lateral geniculate nucleus of the thalamus to the primary visual cortex. Right. A thin sheet. Rebecca says, I used to think the human brain is the most fascinating part of the brain. And then I thought, well, look what's telling me that. That's an Emo Phillips quote. Chris Curran, Podcast Engineering School, is against this. He says in capital letters, never, never, never. LOL. Beauty Bubble says, at Rebecca Gunter, I got messed up because of the Your Brain on Drugs ad showing an egg being fried. What I know about the brain that goes that far, so the topic today is needed. Rebecca mentions John Waters for the smell-e-vision. The movie Polyester came with a sniff card that was terrible odors like old sneakers. Oh, my God.
And garbage pail and skunk. Yeah. He was for smell-o-vision.
He's so strange, dude. Live Podcast Media, welcome. Says, I read about AI that can read your mind and thoughts, including dreams. I wait for the dreams part so I know more about the deja vu that always happens. Rebecca said, as long as you three are still in it, I welcome the strange world. That's so nice. Back at you, Rebecca. Bruce says, what if they can give you the sonar senses of a bat or the smell senses of a bloodhound as long as it doesn't get weaponized? Yeah. What about the ability to fly like a bird? There you go. Live Podcast Media says, it'll be great to know things before they're happening, not only in dreams, but transcribed into real info data. So you get like your podcast show notes, you get a transcription from your podcast host. You wake up in the morning, there's a transcription from your dream.
There you go.
You could even publish it as a blog.
Yeah.
I'd be like, yay.
That's
I think that there's one aspect of this that's really kind of, as I think about it more, you know, our brains are kind of, they modulate and moderate the inputs that we get.
Yeah.
And I've heard of people in the past that have had heightened sense, like maybe they can hear better than they ever have, or they're too sensitive to sound, and that can drive problems too. So there is a danger that we provide ourselves with, you know, increased ability for sensing and thing, where it overwhelms our capacity to handle that information. Yeah. Could be problems with that, and we don't really fully understand. We're playing around with this stuff without really clearly understanding how the brain really works and how it can modulate the input stuff so we can not go insane.
I mean, I think we're dealing with an amount of data input on a daily basis that, I mean, humans just weren't designed to do. I mean, the networks of people that we have, right, the sites and the news and the information and the intake and the visual stimulation. I mean, this is all within a very short time in human history. And you look at like evolution, and there's like, well, humans started developing this capacity 200,000 years ago or 5 million years ago. They started to, you know, no, this is all in like, you know, like we went years from sort of living in villages and stuff isolated from the rest of the world, right, to like, now we know what's happening 24/7 almost everywhere. And, you know, every opinion and every piece of information. Chris Kern says the types of technological advancements, these types of technology, easy for me. So let's start again. Chris Kern says these types of technological advancements are scary because humans, broadly speaking, are mostly still behaving like animals, fear, hatred, power, control, etc., instead of wisdom, peace, compassion.
Wow. Yes.
Yeah, that's our next step, right, is to be able to cope with this level of information. Yeah. We're going to have to become more compassionate towards the world, and we're going to have to filter out things. I don't know, or we're just going to have to tolerate more, ambiguity and confusion and just, you know, look at everything through the lens of compassion and love, and don't even go into those areas of fear and hatred.
Well, I think we're screwed.
Right.
Our capacity to harm each other is growing. Is the same survive as it always was, but the tools to do it, which is why the 20th century was like the bloodiest century ever, because we had weapons of mass killing that we didn't have. Well, so prior to that,
I'm also hopeful that AI can be more intelligent than humans and make better choices on this stuff. And maybe in the long run, AI is going to save us from destroying ourselves. And that's what I hope.
It's fascinating to me that social revolutions, the Green Revolution being the first one, agriculture, the Industrial Revolution, the Information Age, all of those social revolutions, the one after it is happening in half the time. And right now, our generation is projected to be the first one to ever see two in one lifetime, the Information Age and AI. So that's why I say we're screwed, because I just really don't know how we're going to be able to really manage the reality of seeing two social revolutions occur in one lifetime. But I'm hopeful, because we have the Stream Leader Report weekly live panel every Monday, 1:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, to keep us all grounded.
I just want to say one last thing real quick here. What gives me hope too is this, that our brains are so amazing, and there's this thing called neuroplasticity. Yeah. You know, the brain can regenerate. I mean, if you look at today, even, and for so long, people that have struggled with addiction, it changes the way the brain thinks, so that the frontal lobes, where your right and reasoning is happening, the blood flow even stops through. There are lessons, so you can't. Now, the cool thing is, though, is if there is treatment and they abstain from the addiction, it gives the brain a chance to rewire. So there is hope. It's not all doom and gloom. You know, I think once we get there, there might even be specialized counselors just for that. Rewire your brain from the friggin' vest.
Well, before we wrap up, I want to bring in a story because it definitely covers Rebecca's celebrity crush. I think she may even have an agreement with Tony if he comes along. John Stewart, who Rebecca just adores, hosts a show called The Problem. Well, hosted a show called The Problem. It's not going to move forward at Apple amid quote-unquote creative differences. The Planned 8 episode, third season of the talk show, will no longer proceed. He was going to get into issues including AI and Israel, but probably the one that brought it all to a halt is China.
Yep, Apple TV and deep pulling back the curtain on China did not mesh well, and the show was canceled. And I brought this to the table today because when we had our Russell Brand being canceled conversation and talking truth to power, I told y'all somebody needs to check on Jon Stewart, and womp womp. I hope he becomes a rising independent creator, as we really are. We really are something to watch.
Well, that is awesome. I'm so glad we did a show today. I was really depressed about what was going on in the news, and while it remains a serious situation, it's good that we had a chance to get together and share some human moments and talk about it with each other and with the wonderful people who dropped into the chat and left so much insight on these topics. So
sharing is caring, RB.
Absolutely. Thank you. Rob, you got a show tonight. Tell everybody what you got going on.
I'm gonna be there.
It's the show on the StreamYard channel called Podcast Tips with Rob Greenlee, and I'm going to have a terrific guest on talking about video productions around video podcasting and how to best do that, and you know how you walk this line between video podcasting, video on YouTube, and audio podcasting, and trying to get the best out of both of those is kind of the overall topic of this show. So it's live at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. So I have a former producer from CNN that's gonna join me on the program to talk about that blending between mainstream media production and what we can do at home.
That's a fantastic topic. Rebecca, where can we find Business in the Raw or the live show that you hosted this morning?
Thank you so much. Stonefruit Roll Up every Thursday, 12 noon. It's high noon Eastern Standard Time on YouTube and also on my LinkedIn page. And Business in the Raw season 2 is going live next Tuesday. We're live streaming our sessions, and then we'll do a fully produced season in the spring. But this week on Tuesday, Halloween, we have the lovely and gracious Renee Hastings joining us to talk about how to. Yeah, I'm so excited to have her to help us figure out how we can launch a business and get some team support. So see us then. Also, YouTube and LinkedIn Tuesday at 10 a.m.
Claudia, what's next for you?
Well, Viva La Stage is on hiatus right now until I heal up from this. But you can certainly sign up on my YouTube channel, Claudia Santiago Official, and you'll get notifications there.
Sounds good. This has been the
show. What about you, RB? Sorry.
I'm coming back next week we're going to be off. Rob and I are both traveling on that Thursday, so we're going to skip next week, and then in 2 weeks we will be back with a new show. So check out the Stream Leader Report. You can go to the Livestream Universe YouTube channel. You can find all the back episodes there. You can also find us on all the podcast apps. This is episode number 24. Thanks again for being here. For Rebecca Gunter, Business in the Raw, Claudia Santiago, Viva La Stage, and Rob Greenlee of The Trust Factor, I'm Ross Brand. This has been the Stream Leader Report. See you in 2 weeks, Thursday, 1:30 p.m. Eastern. Take care, everybody.